The Ghost Goal Podcast.
While the Premier League may be returning this weekend, we don't have any matches to recap from the last weekend and the duration of the international break, so we thought we'd spend our time on this, what you may call off week, revisiting some of our preseason predictions since the transfer window has closed. So we're going to be talking top four predictions, relegation picks, and you know, we may even sprinkle in a little bit of the Champions League group stage previews, if you may, as that kicks up midweek next week. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 422. How are you feeling, Javier? You're looking at your past predictions and making a lot of changes, or are we going to stick to what we stick to our guns, if you may, this week?
Sadly, Alex, there'll probably be some revisions this week. You know, I think there was a lot of moves during that last month of the window, the last 3 weeks. You know, we did the pod, I think, in, you know, like early August, basically.
I mean, it depends. You know, we did the relegation previews first. There's been some movement there in moves. We did the preseason predictions for top four like the week before the season kicked off. So mid August. It's only been a month, Javier.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well, you know, and excited to get the Premier League footy back because, you know, the international break's all right. But it didn't go very well for Peru. We had a decent draw away from home at Paraguay, but then we had Brazil at home, and I feel like we had the draw just in the bag, and Martinelli comes on and just terrorizes us for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and just honestly, he changed the game because Rodrigo wasn't doing anything during the time that he was on the pitch. So he won the corner, and off the corner, Neymar puts it in, and they get a bullshit goal off a corner and go and win in Peru as usual. So just never get anything against Brazil in World Cup qualifying, and it always feels like shit when we have to play them. So I know Ireland didn't have a great time either, Alex. So
I'm going to abstain from talking about Ireland because I already complained in last week's pod that Evan Ferguson was going to miss both qualifiers, and they went exactly as expected. So I'll let you know if Ireland ever start
we're
trending in the right direction.
We're both miserable during international breaks. Yeah, we're both want our club footy back, even though yours isn't as, you know.
I would still take Chelsea to watching Ireland play against France and Holland.
Right.
It's a nightmare. Okay, we've got plenty to get through today. Let's start at the bottom, like we did with the previews. Our relegation picks going into the season. I had Burnley, Sheffield United, and Luton in no particular order. The three promoted teams. Javier, you had Crystal Palace, Sheffield United, and Luton. So only one team difference there. I can confidently say right now I am sticking with my relegation picks. All three of them are getting relegated.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great shout, Alex. I think Burnley have looked just as bad as Luton, basically. They've looked terrible so far. Statistically, they've been the team with the worst defense.
I wouldn't go that far. Luton have looked worse than Burnley, I feel like. Burnley have just played teams like City and Tottenham. Like, those games have been at home, and then they had a game with Luton postponed because Luton are still getting their stadium worked on. So those two teams have played one fewer game than everyone else. I still think Burnley have a chance, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of teams like Everton and Wolves that I completely understand if you pick one of those.
Well, I was
going to
say, I think of the three, Sheffield's looked the best, I believe.
Yeah,
so
probably.
Far. I would say Sheffield's looked the best. They've looked the most apart in the Premier League. And they look a little bit like that side that Chris Wilder, you know, first brought up in the Premier League and surprised everyone so much. So if they can keep finding goals, I think Cameron Archer, he emerged as a player who's going to look, you know, maybe can chip in with double-digit goals in that team. And if he does, I think Sheffield United have a decent chance of staying up.
One more Sheffield United player I want to call out, a signing that they made, is Gustavo Hammer, the Dutch midfielder who was playing for Coventry last year and did very well in the
he was their best player.
Playoffs. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think he already had like a great goal against Nottingham Forest that made it 1-1, and Sheffield went on and lost that game near the end. But he's a very promising addition to that team, and not going to score a ton of goals, but he gives them at least a little bit of a goal threat from midfield. But yeah, Archer and McBurnie, the relationship you started to see in that Everton 2-2 draw they had, if that can flourish, then maybe he's the fill-in for Ndiaye leaving for Marseille, I think it was. So I like that, that you're giving props to Sheffield United. I too give them props, and I feel like they maybe have like the same chance of staying up that Burnley have, which is like an okay chance, but I just think they won't have the goals and the defensive record to keep themselves in the division. So I'm sticking with the three promoted teams to go right back down.
The other team, Alex, is that I'm worried about. I think I overreached a little bit with Crystal Palace. They didn't end up losing Elise as well, which I thought was going to be a big loss. And, you know, they were able to hold on to their players, so I think they'll be okay. Is Wolves. Wolves lost Matheus Nunes, who on deadline day, which is a huge, you know, I think he was their best player. He's the type of player who, you know, I was jealous of. I wanted him on Arsenal, and now he's on Manchester City, and I mean, I think that's a massive loss for Wolves. I don't think they replaced him. I think they just lost Jean Moutinho as well. You know, I think they're going to be very, very, very thin. They don't have a lot of goals in them, and I see them being, you know, right down there. They could get relegated this season. And I think of maybe the one teams, I don't have Burnley. From what they've shown so far in the first month of the season and after the transfer window, I'm not sure that they're going to stay up. I kind of have them as my third relegation pick right now, and possibly Wolves as well, and Sheffield staying up. I think Sheffield have more goals in them than Wolves and are similar defensively. So I'm actually going to say Sheffield stays up and Wolves and Burnley get relegated.
I see what you mean. I'm going to stick by Wolves staying up just because, you know, they do have a manager in Gary O'Neill. I feel like I always forget his name, which isn't a great sign, but he still kept a team like Bournemouth up last season that didn't have like a ton of, you know, great goal scoring options. And that's a similar issue for this Wolves team. Now, in terms of signings, I don't see too many incoming signings
but
that
Gary
like help
O'Neill
them score
dealing
goals
with all like Portuguese and Latino play, like yeah, their whole like profile of player was like Portuguese.
So?
And
I mean,
like,
it still is. They brought
Spanish
in
Gary O'Neill's, you know, I don't know how good his Spanish is, but I don't know how much like him and his group of coaches is going to mesh as well with the squad.
Well, funny how that works. When players move to England, usually they kind of have to learn at least some English. So, like, you could just say, "Oh, how does Max Kilman communicate with the rest of the back line of Wolves?" Like they figure it out. Obviously, they've had English players before, Connor Cody. I'm sure that's not going to be the thing that keeps them down. The goal scoring would be a real problem. And while I admit they haven't signed anyone to really fix that, they do have a couple of players in that, you know, could potentially take the place of a Matheus Nunes. A very underrated signing that I don't think many people, I personally didn't know much about him, but thanks to Roberto Rojas on Twitter, he's a great follower, you should go follow him. He enlightened me to the player that is Enzo Gonzalez, the new Paraguayan midfielder that they just signed from Libertad. So that's an option to replace Matheus Nunes. He's only 18, but, you know, he's been playing up in age group his whole life. They signed Jean-Ricner Bellegard from Strasbourg, who's another more defensive midfield option for only about 15 million. And then the other big issue I had with their team was their center back options. And they went out and signed Santiago Bueno from Girona. So they've replaced players like Nunes, though we don't know how good those replacements are going to be just quite yet. And, you know, they've bolstered their defense a little bit, and they managed to hold on to José Sá. So I think their defensive record will maybe even improve this season, and that in turn can maybe help, you know, plug the holes that they have further up the fields in terms of goal scoring. So for them, I think they'll do enough to stay up, especially with the experience of, you know, Gary O'Neill keeping a similar kind of squad like Bournemouth up last season. I think Everton is the one that's on everyone's minds. Neither of us have Everton going down, and I feel like most people are going to be shouting, why not Everton? Because it feels pretty desperate at this point. Like, why are you not having Everton go right back down or go back down at all?
Honestly, Alex, I think there's a few players that we haven't seen yet, and I also really like their deadline day signing of that Beto. I don't know if you've watched him play, but he's kind of like the perfect Sean Dyche striker. He's like 6'4".
Yeah.
He's versatile, quick. He's like Chris Wood, you know, so I think he's going to be
a hit
on Everton.
Don't put Chris Wood and quick in the same sentence ever.
Hey, Chris Wood's pretty fast for how big he is.
Maybe 5 years ago.
They also, you know, have Jack Harrison and Dan Juma on loan. Dan Juma's looked okay so far, but he's definitely looked, you know, like a cut above some of the other players on the team. So I think he could, you know, improve them a decent bit.
Jack Harrison went under the radar. I didn't even realize that one until you just mentioned it. But yeah, he's, I mean, a Premier League experienced midfielder. Yeah, I think he scores think like he seven gets, or eight got, goals a season usually.
Yeah, I was going to say in Leeds' first season, I want to say he got double-digit goals and assists. I think he had 10 goals and 10 assists in his first season in the Premier League. So you might have to double-check me on that one. But I know Jack Harrison's a, you know, like you said, experienced Premier League winger. Only 26 years old. I think they can get a decent bit out of him. You know, even bringing Ashley Young on a free transfer at left back, he's still like a serviceable, okay left back. You know, still has pace in him somehow. But yeah, he's not a bad transfer at all either. So I think they have enough to stay up, and just enough. I think they're going to be, you know, around 17th, you know, right there.
Yeah, it's going to be a dogfight. I'm not going to dispute that. It's going to be very tough for them to stay up. And I think the main issue that they're going to have is, you know, this bad start to the season under Sean Dyche. At what
pretty,
point
pretty shocking
do they,
Alex Iwobi lost or left.
Do you mind if I just finish about Sean Dyche?
Loss. Yeah.
It seems like with this like bad start to the season, there's starting to be murmurs around like, could Sean Dyche be one of the first managers fired? I that would be absolutely crazy. I think you just stick with him till Christmas, and if they're still like in a very bad relegation position, like there's no hope, then you obviously have to fire him and try and bring someone in to make a miracle happen. But as long as they don't, you know, get trigger happy and fire him, I feel like they'll be okay. And you know, as for them selling Iwobi, that's definitely a loss, but I think they have a lot of high expectations for Danjuma in terms of like what he's going to do for them creatively and in terms of scoring goals. And Iwobi, he's been good in shifting from that winger position that he played more so at Arsenal to more of a central creative role at Everton. But the goal threat has never really been there in his career. Yeah, he scores like a couple, and one can be like a beautiful goal from long range every now and then. But you want someone with a bit more like consistent threat. And if Danjuma and Beto can form the kind of partnership that it looked like they were creating in that last game, the Sheffield United game, when Beto came on, then yeah, I like their chances. I think they've improved their attacking options relative to the other teams they're competing against down at the bottom of the table. So yeah, I'm comfortable with not having them get relegated. Do we want to go to the top four discussion, or are there any, you know, transfers, like high profile transfers that you think we may have missed like since that transfer deadline day? I can think of plenty that we maybe the Brennan Johnson signing from going from Nottingham Forest to Tottenham.
One. That's a big one. That was I know Nottingham Forest signed a bunch of players on deadline day as well to replace Brennan Johnson. But yeah, that was a pretty crazy deadline day signing from Tottenham. I think that's just a show of intent that they want, you know, a multitude of players for Ange to have, you know, at his disposal. And it's a different era now for Tottenham in terms of the way that they're trying to build, you know, the players that they're bringing into the club. It doesn't feel like the same profile of player that they brought in under Mourinho, under Pochettino, you know, under Conte. They were players with more like defensive minded, with more work rate. You know, they might be skilled, someone like Ndombele, but they're not, you know, out and out just like attacking goal scoring players generally. You know, those players have always kind of been there with Son and Kane. So to add a lot more players to that with that type of mentality is, you know, now that Kane's gone, I mean, you need players like Brendan Johnson now in your team, like James Maddison, you know, like Heung-Min Son, Kulishevsky. You know, a lot of different goal scoring threats in the team, and I think Tottenham are in it for top four, Alex, which is weird.
Well,
kind of scary.
We'll get to that, I guess. The thing I want to mention about Brendan Johnson going to Tottenham, I think it says a lot about how they feel about, you know, this whole Heung-min Son playing center forward idea, which obviously paid off perfectly in that Burnley game when he scored the hat trick last time out. And it doesn't bode well for Richarlison. I think we've seen a couple of games with Richarlison up top as the center forward to start the season. And while Tottenham, you know, still had positive results, he was missing for most of those games. And he's continued that weird form with Brazil. And you think if he can't do it with Brazil playing against Bolivia and, no offense, Peru, then why are we to believe that he's all of a sudden going to, you know, start scoring goals at Tottenham in the Premier League? So they signed Brennan Johnson, and frankly, the idea of a Brennan Johnson left wing, Son center forward, Kulusevski right wing, the idea of that as your front three in an Ange Postecoglou team that demands so much in sort of the high pressing game from those forwards. As a Chelsea fan, it doesn't make me happy. So that should make Spurs fans very happy. It's a very interesting signing, but I don't think there's a more interesting signing that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet than Ryan Gravenberch going from Bayern Munich to Liverpool. They finally got their man. They finally convinced someone not to go to London and instead to come up to the Northwest. And that poor son of a bitch was Ryan Gravenberch, a very promising young player who I've been very high on since his days at Ajax. Didn't really get the opportunities at Bayern Munich, but he could be a perfect fit for this Liverpool team. I'm yet to see him really excel as the sort of lone defensive presence in a midfield three. Every time I've seen him, you know, play his game to his best extent, it's usually been as more of a box-to-box player. So I have that one question to ask of the signing, if that's how they intend to play him. But he has all the tools to mold into that, you know, Fabinho replacement. And he's good enough to, you know, play in that midfield right now with maybe someone like, was it Kubo? Who's the Japanese midfielder they signed? Why am I forgetting his name? Endo? Wataru Endo?
Yeah, Wataru Endo.
Yeah, I was thinking of the other, the young winger from Japan. Yeah, Endo. Gravenberch could play with someone like Endo and be a bit more of a box-to-box option. And he'll be excellent in the Premier League right away. And frankly, that signing is, you know, my equivalent to your statement about Tottenham, that it's making me think, okay, Liverpool have a much better chance of, you know, finishing in the top four, maybe even challenging for the league title.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think we've seen so far to start the season, the type of things. I mean, Szoboszlai looks very, very good. He looks like the type of player that can ping balls into the channels for forwards, you know, forward runs that Salah, Nunez, and Diaz are doing. And the other player, you know, we know McAllister can do that. He did it for Argentina, did it for Brighton. But yeah, now they're bringing in Ryan Gravenberch, like you say, and they're going to have lots of different creative attacking midfielders, players that can get on the ball, and they have depth now in midfield. So they asked, we asked, you know, a month ago for them to make a couple of midfield signings. They went and did it. And, you know, I think they made, what, four midfield signings this summer, which, yeah, they definitely needed it. And I also think, Alex, that they're, you know, in for top four, possibly the title as well. And, yeah, my top four's completely changed from the pod earlier this season. Are we completely changed? Completely changed.
I don't think that means basically what you think it means.
Almost completely.
Because
changed.
That would mean that Manchester City and Arsenal aren't finishing in the top four, which I don't think you're
going to
do.
Well, no, I just mean that everyone's placement is different.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get to that. I mean, we can talk about transfers as we go, but I mean, those were the two main, like, big ones that I wanted us to hit on before we moved on to reevaluating our top four predictions. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to do the honors?
Yeah, you go first, Alex.
Okay, so last time out in our previews, I had Manchester City first, Arsenal second, Newcastle United third, and Manchester United fourth, with Liverpool finishing just outside of the top four. But to be fair, I did say I thought they were going to make Champions League by winning Europa League, so in some way that's kind of stayed the same. I'm only really editing my third and fourth picks. Actually, no, I'm editing from three to four, I'm editing from two to four. I have Manchester City first, Liverpool second, Arsenal third, and Manchester United fourth. Javier, thoughts on that before you give your own?
I'm definitely torn right now about Manchester United because there's, you know, a lot of drama that's going on behind the scene again, and it doesn't seem like the club can catch a break in terms of, you know, just a season where they can focus on the football and there's not going to be things going on behind the scenes. I think that's just such a downer for Manchester United fans. You know, it's hard to get excited about your team when there's always some, you know, bullshit going on in the background that's ruining, you know, a player doing something, some scandal, beating someone up. You know, it's hard to get excited and get behind your team when stuff, huge players keep getting put out of the team because of something like that. So I kind of think that's going to make Man United falter. I do think Hoyland is going to, you know, be a big boost for them and give them, you know, that same type of winning run that they went on last season. I think they're going to be able to do something like that again this season, but I don't know if they're going to be, I think they're still going to be inconsistent and they're going to have, you know, spurts of bad form where they drop a lot of points.
So. I will not deny that. I still agree with you on that. They're going to be inconsistent for sure, but it basically becomes a question for me of whether is Tottenham for real? Are Newcastle really going to drop off like that much? I think Newcastle will drop off that much. That's why I have them, you know, not in the top four anymore. I had them a third preseason, and you know, it seems kind of an overreaction. But just from what I've initially seen, I don't like their depth. And to deal with Champions League as well, one of the toughest groups that we'll get to in a second, it's just too much to ask for me, with especially with how Tottenham have, you know, come on early under Postecoglou and the signings they've made. Manchester United, I'm sticking with just because what you just mentioned, Hoyland, I've seen enough from him, not just for Man United, but for Denmark as well, that I think he will have enough of a positive influence to sort of set things in place. It's hard to create and score goals when you have a bunch of attacking, creative, like wingers and attacking midfielders like United do, and no focal point for them. Hoyland can become that focal point, and I think other players' performances will improve as that happens. We're also seeing Bruno really come into form, especially for Portugal during this last international break. And no one's acknowledging the Sofyan Amrabat signing. Now, maybe you don't appreciate him as much as I do. He was the underrated star of that Morocco team that won the World, or, you know, got to the, what was it, the Final Four, the semifinals of the World Cup. And he was an absolute monster for Fiorentina again last season, getting them all the way to that Europa Conference League final. And he, frankly, he was the best player on the pitch in midfield, and a midfield that included Declan Rice. He ran rings around Declan Rice and the rest of the West Ham team. So I think that's a huge signing for them that will settle their midfield and will allow Casemiro to, you know, maybe be rotated a bit more and be fresher for the games he does play in. And, you know, that stability in, you know, the up front with Hoyland and in midfield with Casemiro and Amrabat, two legitimate midfield options, center midfield options, I think that will get them at least fourth place. But I'm not denying it's going to be a battle for sure. It's going to be very tough.
So, Alex, sadly, hate to do it this early, but I've seen enough already. I think Arteta's going to tinker too much this season. I think he's going to do things that are going to drop points, just like we've now done already early on when we shouldn't have.
Can you remind us of your top four one more time, just for?
Oh yeah, sorry. So let me.
The previous one, and then
my previous top four was Arsenal first, Man City second, Man United third, Liverpool fourth, Aston Villa fifth, and Newcastle sixth. So I'll start actually. Yeah, I was already going into it. So
you're calling it off already, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, Alex. I think
even with the De Bruyne injury in game one.
Yeah, but you know what? We then also had a Timber injury for the entire season, and he was a huge reason of why I thought we were going to win the league. I thought he was going to be a huge player for us. So having no Timber for this entire season, that's been a massive blow for me in terms of like our defensive depth. I think now instead of having a player who can play all across the back line, we just don't have that versatility anymore. We really are going to rely on Zinchenko again this season because we let Tierney go. So I'm really kind of, you know, we have Tomiyasu who can play there, but I am worried about, you know, the left back position now. And with Manchester City signing Mateus Nunes, who I value him very highly, I didn't think that Manchester City could get him, you know, for during, so, you know, close to the end of the window, such a huge player. I think we haven't seen him play yet for Manchester City. We don't know his impact, but I suspect it's going to be huge, and I think he's going to very quickly get into the team. I think he's the Gundogan replacement. He's the player I needed to see for like a, you know, it just to a player who can get, you know, 7, 8, 10 goals in the Premier League from an attacking midfield position in this team. He's the depth for De Bruyne as well. You know, it's just there's.
Frankly, he could drop into the deeper midfield two positions. Like, I mean, Kovacic and Rodri have that pretty much locked down right now. But if one of them get injured,
the way that Kovacic has been playing in these first few games as well, you just know that he's going to get better and better in that team. And the understanding he already has is incredible with the players. And it's just it makes Man City. Like, I know Pep's always had a dream of, like, Jorginho, like, in that role earlier on, and now Kovacic is just as good at, you know,
that was in 2018, and Guardiola's mindset and what he wants from players changes, like, year to year. So I don't think he would have wanted Jorginho now. Like, Kovacic probably suits him better now.
But I'm saying, you know, prime Jorginho back then.
And that was also the year before they got Rodri. They signed Rodri a year later, who's way better than Jorginho, so... Yeah, I don't think Pep's thought about Jorginho since. Maybe in that Champions League final he lost. But I want to rewind just back to Arsenal real quick. Is the Timber signing or the Timber injury, is that the main influence on you, you know, backing down from the Arsenal to win the league pick? Or is it what you've seen from Kai Havertz and Arteta's like stubbornness in trying to make that work so far?
No, because I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work at some point this season, and we're going to go on a great run, and it's going to look really good, and everyone's going to forget about this. But having said that, I still think that this injury is going to cost us, because I think we're going to have other defensive injuries during the season, and we're not going to be the best team in the league defensively now. You know, I think that without Yuri and Timber, this team looks a lot weaker. So I just... To me, it was a huge blow. That, with actually the Matias Nunez signing, that's what I was saying. I think I didn't have that in my brain that they were going to have a player of that caliber in midfield to, you know, for the next, you know, 7, 8 years or whatever long they have him. But he's an amazing player. Under Pep Guardiola, he's going to only get better. And, just sick, Alex. I think Man City first. I think Arsenal second. I think Liverpool third. So I already had them fourth. I think I'm just moving them up one place. I do think Liverpool finished third. I think that they are going to score more goals than anyone this season. I think even maybe more than Man City. We'll see. But I think they're going to score a lot of goals this season. They're going to be really good offensively and get a lot of big results. They're going to be really hard to play against at home. So I have, you know, a lot of faith that they're going to get at least top four and be, you know, outsiders for that title shot as well. And be, you know, right in it with Arsenal and with City. So, and then for my fourth place, Alex. I think Tottenham might finish in fourth.
You think, or is that your pick? What are you going with?
It's like, this is so bad, Alex. I don't know.
This sounds like this is what you're going with.
Maybe not.
Okay,
Tottenham
well,
aren't going to finish.
You tease.
Right. I think I think Manchester United.
All right.
I think Manchester United will finish. But I think fifth place, I'm kicking out Aston Villa. I think Villa will now finish, you know, eighth or ninth. From what I've seen from them, I have not liked I think they're very inconsistent right now. And they're going to be, you know, back and forth this season between looking really good and really bad. So
they just got bit by the injury bug.
That,
it's the same reason like the Chelsea discussion completely died after Nkunku got injured. It's just kind of like many injuries, you're going to be screwed.
I think Tottenham finished fifth, and I think Newcastle finished sixth.
Okay. And once again, my picks were Manchester City first, Liverpool second, Arsenal third, and Manchester United fourth. I didn't give picks for fifth, sixth, and seventh, but I appreciate you going the extra mile, Javier. All right, let's talk about some of these Champions League groups. There's only a couple that really jump out to me. You can talk about your group, even though it seems pretty easy, Javier. Arsenal, their first time back in the Champions League. They're in Group B.
This is an easy group, but I think
name the teams.
A lot of people are looking.
Give people a little context.
I think a lot of people... No, yeah, I say the reason it's easy is because of our Pod 1 team. Sevilla is probably, you know, one of the worst Pod 1 teams, if not the worst Pod 1 team. The easiest outside of Feyenoord we could have gotten. So, you know, very happy with the Sevilla pick. I think PSV is a hard pod, pot three team. You know, I don't think there were that many amazing pot three teams. The only team that I might have not wanted to play more was maybe AC Milan, but all of the other pot three teams were you know, easier than PSV, and I think PSV are going to be the main contenders for getting out of this group. I actually think PSV and Arsenal get out of this group. I think we still win the group, but I think, you know, we did lose at PSV last season. I know they lost some key players this summer, but I think they made some great signings as well, and I think that they're going to be the other force in this group. And then Lens, you know, they've had a not great start to the season in Liga, and I don't know how much of a force they're going to be in Europe, but I'm sure they're going to, you know, be hard to beat, especially away from home. But I think that the way that the games are set up, I feel like it's, you know, we play one of our tougher games. We play PSV for that first game on the 20th of September, actually next week, a week from today, Alex. We play, that's crazy, actually. I didn't know we were playing Champions League in the midweek.
Yeah, it's always right after the first international break, Champions League kicks off. I know you haven't been here for a while, Javier, but...
I know. This is weird. This is weird, Alex. Playing on a Wednesday? But yeah, no, that's exciting. And then we play Lens away in October, which we, you know, might drop points there. But then we play Sevilla twice and, you know, finish out the group with a relatively easy couple of games. I mean, I think that that final game, PSV away, might be the group decider, and that might be the who wins the group. So I think
they beat you there last year in the Europa League, right?
They did. They did. Okay. So I think that's how the group's going to go. I think we're going to be, both of us are going to do well in it, and at the end it's going to be a, you know, group decider on that game.
I'm just going to say don't count out Lens just yet, even though they may have had a bad start to their league campaign. They just signed this kid from Montpellier, Eliyahi, who is linked with Chelsea for a lot of this summer as a center forward signing. Scored 19 goals in the French league last season. Only 20 years old. I think he had a game where he scored 5 in a game. Maybe it's 4. Maybe I'm overhyping him a little bit, but he's like a really promising young player that you would expect they signed for this Champions League campaign. And they also signed a winger from Club Brugge, who have been competing in the Champions League the last couple of years, Faitout Mawasa, who's only on loan. But clearly they have this Champions League campaign in mind, trying to make sure they don't get completely embarrassed. So I wouldn't count them out just yet. And also Sevilla. Sevilla are not the monster in Europe that they used to be, but they usually, you know, hold their own in the group stage. Yeah, they get knocked out every now and then in the Champions League group stage, but they make it competitive. So I think it looks easy on paper, but I think it's going to end up being a little bit trickier than Arsenal fans may anticipate. But yeah, again, I still would have you guys winning that group. The only other group that really jumps off the page to me is Group F with...
Well, before we talk about Group F, Alex, we got to talk about Manchester United's group, Group A.
That's a good shout. Yeah, that's at least interesting.
They got Bayern Munich, Manchester United, Copenhagen, and Galatasaray. You know, I think that it's not like a given. I think Manchester United will get out of this group, but they play the first game away at Bayern, so they're very likely to start the group with a loss. And if they do, you know, then whoever wins during the Galatasaray Copenhagen game, you know, probably Galatasaray, you know, they're going to have a boost. And if they play Manchester United and get a win, you know, then all of a sudden it's a 6-point gap and you might not make it out of the group. So, you know, it just Manchester United really need to make sure that they you know, maybe don't lose that first game against Bayern, because that would be a huge result. But even if they do, they got to make sure that they get a result in the second match. But I think that could be, you know, a pretty good group. I think relatively easy, but, you know, Bayern is a monster to get as your pot one pick as you're Manchester United. So that is kind of, you know, shitty for them that they have to play Bayern twice.
It makes the margin for error tougher because, I mean, Bayern Munich aren't, they're the best team in the group, obviously. Galatasaray are a real threat in this group. And I know that feels weird to say, but I think you've laid it out perfectly there. And there's also the transfers they've brought in. Yes, a lot of these players are, you know, Premier League rejects, but sometimes all it takes is new surroundings, a new league to boost their confidence. And players like Davinson Sanchez, Tanguy Ndombele, both from Tottenham, signed pretty close to the end of the window. you know, could, you know, breathe fresh air into their careers. They signed Hakim Ziyech from Chelsea. He's another, like, confidence player that I could definitely see playing in a different league, will improve his performances and, you know, maybe bite Manchester United in the butt in one of those games. They also got Kerem Demirbay from Bayer Leverkusen, who isn't...
That's a pretty decent signing.
Yeah, and I haven't even mentioned, remember Tete, the... I think he's Brazilian. Yeah, the Brazilian winger who played for Leicester before last season. Remember, he came in January and like had a couple of solid games for them. They signed him as well. They still have Mauro Icardi. They signed Wilfred Zaha as a free agent in the summer. They've like loaded their team up. Cedric Bakambu,
yeah, definitely.
Cedric Bakambu, like, Javier, as a backup option. They've got Angelino from RB Leipzig, the left back. They've got players.
Wow, like, they made a bunch of signings.
Even when
That's
Galatasaray
incredible.
Didn't have players, it was still tough to go to Istanbul and beat them there in the Champions League. So now that they have, you know, frankly, I can feel confident saying this, Champions League-ish level players, putting an ish on there despite saying it confidently, I could totally see Galatasaray upsetting the order of this group and finishing ahead of Manchester United. So thank you for bringing that one up. That's definitely a group to watch. Are there any other ones you want to mention before we go to Group F, the clear group of death?
I mean, I was going to say, I think Group C, it's nice that we're going to see two games between Napoli and Real Madrid. That should be fun. You know, Napoli pretty much kept all of their best players other than Kim Min-jae.
But they lost Spalletti. He's gone to the Italian national team job. And they have...
You think that's going to be big? But they still have Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia, like, the rest of the squad, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it's still pretty good.
I don't know if they're going to win the league again and be the amazing team they were last
Probably
year.
Probably not. I think no human J is going
to... They've already lost to Lazio this season in the league.
Yeah, they might not be as good this year. I was thinking that was going to be really fun to see, you know, a couple of those teams go, but... Group C, still Napoli and Real Madrid get out. Group D.
Keep an eye out for Union Berlin, their first time in the Champions League.
Yeah,
they've had a meteoric rise.
Group D looks... Do you think Benfica, Inter Milan, you think that's pretty easy?
That's a very interesting one, too. Benfica, I'm less high on because they've just finished one of those very short cycles where they sell off all their best players, including Enzo Fernandez and Gonzalo Ramos. And, you know, those were two of their best players in midfield and attack, respectively, that helped them, you know, win that group with PSG in it last season. Now they're gone. I need to see more Benfica before I just pencil them in as group winners. Salzburg,
Real Sociedad, they're pretty
good. Real Sociedad and Salzburg are both, you know, solid teams. Real Sociedad not necessarily in the Champions League,
I think
they've
group
been
is kind of open. Yeah, I was about to say this group's a little bit open. I mean, Inter are probably a lock to get out of the group, but I don't think they're a lock to win the group.
I think Inter are just happy to not be in a group that has like Barcelona and Bayern Munich in it, like they've had so many times the last couple of years. They're like, yeah, okay, Salzburg, yeah, we'll take that. Real Sociedad, yeah, fine. But we're running out of time here, so I do want to mention this Group F. Newcastle, their first time back in more than 20 years, or maybe about 20 years in the Champions League. They're a pot four team, so they get drawn into a group with PSG, Borussia Dortmund, and AC Milan. Last year's semi-finalists, AC Milan. What do you think their chances are of getting out of this group? Because personally, I'm not convinced.
God, it's going to be hard, Alex. I mean, what an insane drawing for Newcastle, because they got, you know, one of the hardest, you know, I think the team with the best player in the world, I think Mbappe is still the best player in the world. You know, he's
better than Haaland. Didn't we crown Haaland after that treble?
Well, Haaland's a freak, but we get to see him week in and week out. The Champions League games.
I'm only bringing it up because our former co-host Andrew, he did call us out after that Champions League win for Manchester City, saying that, you know, we've maintained that Mbappe is the best player in the world. Now, I'm going to maintain that Haaland winning a treble and breaking the Premier League like goal scoring record in his first season is grounds for changing my opinion. So I'm sticking with Haaland as best player in the world right now.
Okay, Mbappe's the second best player in the world.
Oh, isn't it great, Javier? It's like 2008 or 2009 all over again, where it's like, oh, is it Messi or Ronaldo? Like, we figured this out, and, you know, we get to watch them.
Yeah, well, now we get to
watch a new
Holland,
but, Messi and Ronaldo.
But yeah, no, I think Dortmund have European pedigree, so do Milan. I think it's going to be very, very hard for Newcastle. I think it's going to be 6 incredibly tough games for them that, you know, I don't know how many points they're going to get in this group. I think they're going to be underestimated as well. I think they might, you know, get a big result, you know, against PSG maybe, or, you know, get a win at Milan or something crazy like that. But I think their fans are going to be crazy as well. I think that they're going to go insane on European nights because they haven't been in Europe in a long, long time.
And people forget how many like big European nights they had back when Sir Bobby Robson was the manager. You know, they obviously still had Alan Shearer. They had good teams that competed in Champions League. This team, maybe talent-wise, is not the same level as those Newcastle teams. But the St. James's Park factor is still massive. And I think that they have to beat Dortmund and AC Milan at home. They just have to.
I think
PSG,
I think
if they draw,
out,
that's
Alex.
Huge. You think they're getting out?
I think Newcastle are getting out of this group. I do. The reason why is because nobody wanted Newcastle. They were the hardest pod 4 team.
Sure.
These other teams are going to be looking at Newcastle and shitting their pants because the quality of player that this Newcastle team has, I think in a one-off game, you know, they could catch some of these teams. I think teams in the Premier League, you know, may to some extent have almost like an advantage physically, and you know they can work at similar levels to Newcastle. I think teams like Dortmund and Milan might struggle against Newcastle, concede a bunch of goals against them, and lose the game. So
we'll find out early.
I actually think that that Newcastle and PSG get out of this group.
That's going to be the first game of the. I mean, there's a couple kicking off at the same time on Tuesday, but Newcastle at AC Milan. At Sandro Tonali returning to the San Siro is going to be the first game for them.
I think Newcastle are going to go win that, Alex.
It all depends on their away form. If they get a draw, or obviously if they win, that would be huge for them. But if they even get a draw in that first game, it will show that the sort of Champions League anthem ringing out beforehand in the San Siro will not have gotten to them. So I'm not going to go that far. I think it's going to be PSG and Dortmund. AC Milan, I think, have improved, but I think they may end up finishing bottom of this group. And that's a semi-finalist last year. So it's a crazy group, but I think...
It's great games. Every game's a banger in that group.
Yeah. Well, we're long over overtime for tonight, so I'll go ahead and wrap things up quickly. Javier, thank you for jumping on this one with me. If you want to follow Javier, you can follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the return of the Premier League this weekend. And until next time, see you.